it's probably saved them a lot of time. Because they're not waiting on returns and things of that nature.
Worked out perfect.
Helps us, helps them.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll be better off, and you guys will be better off. It's great. And we've appreciated you guys letting us use them, get some training. Yeah, it's going to be good. Yeah, I think we had to change our quota a little bit because we've been doing this a little bit more. Go ahead and get started and call to order the Community Correction Partnership full membership meeting. Today is December 14th, 2022. It's 8:30 and we will start with roll call. Ms. Vaughn.
Chief Miracle.
Here.
Court Executive Officer Barbara Pickens. District Attorney Zimmer.
Kenzel for Zimmer. Here.
Public Defender King.
Here.
Sheriff Youngblood.
Doug Yacker, Sheriff Youngblood.
Director Kuwapara.
Here.
Chief Terry.
Brian Croker for Chief Terry.
Administrator Aldera.
Here.
Director Murillo.
Here.
Executive Director Corson.
Here.
Supervisor Perez. Assistant CEO Hitchcock.
Aaron Ellis here for Assistant Hitchcock.
Superintendent Barlow.
Everpoint for Mary Barlow.
And Victim Services Coordinator Fanning.
Here.
All right, thank you very much. Our first item is our consent agenda. We have two items on the consent agenda. That's item number one and item number five. Unless there's any comments or changes that are needed from the committee, I would ask for a motion and a second.
I'll make a motion, TR.
Motion, Mr. Corson.
Second.
Second, Mr. Murillo. Is there any public comment on this item? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, next is public presentation. This is a time in the meeting when members of the public are able to give a presentation on any item that is not on the agenda. Please recognize our 2-minute time limit and state your name and the organization you're with. Are there any public comments? Come on up to the podium.
Good morning. My name is Denise L. Norris. My organization is Inspired to Go Higher. This is my wonderful husband of almost 40 years, Reverend Yuri Norris. This is one of my wonderful students, A students, Mr. Pacheco. And I am here to speak with you briefly, thank you for the invite, about a need we have here. And then you are the subject matter experts. We are here as a niche organization, a new organization, to make a difference in this community with recidivism. And we hope to do that by being a one-stop shop to empower, to encourage, to motivate as a resource center to really make a difference. My student who entered my class didn't even know how to use a computer. And he's an A student now because of special needs we gave him. Recidivism is real. But mental health is more real. 1 out of 5 individuals suffer from mental health. And I'm here today to say we can treat mental health inmates the same as we do individuals who are normal. And our organization is seeking to be the one-stop shop to assist people who really want to make it and but just need a little support. Everyone doesn't have a Reverend Yuri Norris. Everyone doesn't have a Professor Denise Norris. Everyone doesn't have a mentor who has been through the system that can take their hand to support them through that system firsthand, outside of the system. We want to keep their stress levels down for people, to keep them from continue the same old behavior because they can't deal. What's my time? Okay. My name is Denise Norris, Inspired to Go Higher. I'm going to honor your time. I have information for you. Please talk to me. I need you. I need partners to partner with me. I need you to make a difference for this community. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Any other public presentations? Okay, not seeing any. We'll go next, and that's Chairman's report. I just want to state that yesterday the last of our CBO contracts were approved by the board, so this contract go on the calendar year, so they'll be in place for January 1st so we can continue services. And I just want to thank all of the staff. It takes a lot of work. It's almost a year-long process. So all the staff that was involved, I just want to publicly say thank you. We really appreciate it. And we're in a better place because of the work you've done. So thank you. Next is our CCP committee member announcements or reports. Any announcements or reports from the committee?
I have one.
Ms. Finnerty.
This will be my last meeting. I am retiring.
Well, congratulations, and we will miss you.
I'm not sure if we'll have somebody in place for the March, but I'll let them know for sure.
Great, appreciate it. Any other announcements or reports? Okay, we'll go next to item number 6, and this is Kern Behavioral Health and Recovery Services Recovery Station presentation. And Ms. Oliveira will take this.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Anna Oliveira. I'm the Administrator for Substance Use Disorder Division Services with Kern Behavioral Health and Recovery Services. And I'm here today to tell you a little bit about our recovery station program. I've spoken about this project in this meeting before, but it's been a bit, so we decided that it was a good idea to bring you an update today. Let me see if I can. I don't think I can advance them, Violet. So can I just call next slide? Thank you. So this presentation is included in your packet. If you have any questions, I'd be open to answering those at the end, if that's okay. So the Kern County Recovery Station is based on a Sobering Center model, voluntary program for adults, currently funded by Mental Health Services Administration Innovations funding. It's a 5-year funding plan. And what we do there is provide, have folks who are intoxicated come to the center, They're allowed to let their intoxication pass, as well as have conversations about what brought them there, and then have conversations about what services are available in terms of substance use disorders and mental health. The center is staffed with all peer support staff, meaning that every level of staff have had lived experience, either with mental illness, addiction, or both. It's a 24/7 service and currently has 6 beds. The facility where it was located had some damage last year, so we have to reduce capacity from 10 beds to 6. We are on our way back to that facility after the repair, so we're very excited about that. Next slide, please. Listed here is some of the admission criteria for this program. Only serves adults, and like I mentioned, it's for folks who are currently suffering with an intoxication or acute reaction to drugs or alcohol. The service is voluntary, so nobody can be made to go there. Folks need to be medically stable because we don't have any nurses or doctors on staff that can attend to a problem that arises. If blood alcohol level is known, we have set a limit of 0.4, which is pretty high. And if someone is has an encounter with law enforcement, it's up to the discretion of the officer whether to take folks in. I hear that there's some circumstances where they have to. And when they have more discretion, they're able to bring them into the recovery station as another option. Next slide, please. So some people are not appropriate for the recovery station, and we try to limit this as much as possible, but we want to stick to what we do have available as service. One of the main things that that excludes somebody from coming into the recovery station is if they are not able to ambulate because of their intoxication. When someone is too intoxicated, where they're maybe coming in and out of consciousness, are interventions that wouldn't work, and they probably need some medical attention. The other criteria that's pretty important is if someone is in a psychiatric crisis. So if they are in imminent danger of hurting themselves or others, we have the Psychiatric Evaluation Center for that. And our law enforcement officers are pretty familiar with that process from working with us for a number of years and from our mobile evaluation team that responds to these kind of crisis situations as well. In terms of medical conditions that would exclude somebody, is this is kind of the reasonable person rule. If you find someone, if you were to see somebody on the street and you speak to them and they have a wound or a broken bone or they just don't look good, that probably means they need medical attention, and again, not appropriate for the recovery station. Okay, next slide. So some of the services that are provided, like I said earlier, people are brought in and allowed to rest and recover, basically ride the intoxication out. In a lot of cases, that is safe to do because it won't have medical consequences. We don't exclude people based on the substance they've used because it's really difficult to tell out in the field what substance they've used. We screen them in terms of history of addiction and mental illness, and then we try to connect them with available treatment resources, whether that's with our services, our contracted providers, or community resources that we're aware of. Next slide, please. Okay, so I realize that this slide is a little busy, but this we created this to just show how the model works. Folks are not able to walk into care. They need to be brought in. And so on the left side of the screen, you see different entities that are referral sources that we invite them to bring people to us. Once they're at their recovery station, that's that little bit there in the middle you see, our staff do some screening and determine whether the person is in fact appropriate. If not, they are then redirected to the hospital or that psychiatric evaluation center, and sometimes back to law enforcement. This hasn't happened much, but in case somebody becomes aggressive or assaultive, you know, we're gonna ask the officer to deal with it at that time. During the course of the stay, sometimes things happen. So people might complain of chest pains later on in their stay, so then we call emergency services and they're taken to a higher level of care. Sometimes as the intoxication kind of reduces, psychiatric symptoms come out that need, again, that higher level of care. But in the majority of the cases, people complete their stay. It's about 4 to 8 hours. And then one of the things that we established because of our conditional use permit is we want to be good neighbors. So Telecare, who's my contractor that does the service, then transport the person to the next point of service. That could either be back to their own home, their friend's home. It could be to one of the local shelters or navigation centers. It could also be to an outpatient appointment, so either they're starting service, or sometimes the folks that are brought in have been connected to services before, they just haven't been engaged, so we're able to connect them back, which is a great thing. The last option, and that we use only when we have tried all other options and they haven't worked, is when the person asks to go back to their either sheltered or unsheltered site. So maybe where they stay, where their friends stay, where their things are, and we take them back there. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, so these are just some, wanted to help you picture what the program looks like. This is right at the entrance door as folks come in. Next slide. This is our facility on Kentucky Street. So as you can see, it's open to encourage those conversations that happen throughout the stay. Behind that half wall are some beds. Next slide, please. This is where people get to come in and rest. And the quotes you see on the screen there, we gather those from satisfaction surveys that are collected from everybody that will agree to do one upon discharge. And I chose these words because they're pretty powerful. First one says, "You don't realize the help I have gotten from here." "I really like that the staff can relate. Makes me feel like I'm not alone. And I wish there were more resources like this in the community for people in need." Next slide, please. All right, so I'm gonna present you with some data about how the program has been doing. So here you have a comparison of two fiscal years, which is how long the project has been in operation. Fiscal year 2021 and 21-22. So what you see in the blue are admissions in each of those fiscal years. What you see in the orange is what how we were able to identify AB 109 clients. So the way we do that in our electronic health record is we get information from the Sheriff's Department and probation. We enter that into our system, so that way whenever people come into our system, we can identify them as AB 109 clients. So as you can see, initially, the percentage of those admissions was 27%. The following year, admissions increased, but the ratio stayed pretty close to the same, about 23%. Okay, next slide. Now, this these numbers, again, comparing two fiscal years, are some of the law enforcement referrals. So thank you to our partners here who are aware of this service and bring us referrals. And you can see that we've had referrals from the Kern County Sheriff's Office, from Bakersfield Police, a handful from probation, parole, and the California Highway Patrol, which is great. So part of this presentation, my intention is to just bring awareness to this project once more and encourage all of you to encourage your staff to utilize it, because it's been shown to be pretty valuable. And I'm gonna show you how in a minute. Now you see that things have varied in terms of how many people actually are referred from law enforcement. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about the other referral sources that we have. Okay, next slide, please. All right, so why am I talking about the recovery station today? We certainly want to emphasize that this project has, you saw the percentage of AB 109 identified clients. But the way that we see this is everybody who qualifies for the recovery station, they are engaged in a behavior that could lead to criminal justice involvement. So we see this as a preventative type of resource in our community. A lot of other agencies bring us clients who are intoxicated, and as you are all aware, something like being under the influence or public intoxication is a low-level offense that doesn't lead to much because of changes in the law. Not a lot of ability to enforce penalties or follow through with treatment or anything like that. So we find that when people come to the recovery station, if they engage in treatment and decide to make changes to what they do, it can actually prevent recidivism for low-level offenses, to kind of stop that revolving door that we see sometimes. There's some officers that patrol certain areas of the city where they say, "I'm very familiar with this individual and this individual and this individual, and I've arrested them multiple times for being intoxicated, and it has led to no changes." So we think that this the recovery station is an opportunity to offer that to a person instead of one more arrest. We were interested in starting this program because we knew that it would help us reduce costs in several areas that we all are involved in here, like costs and time associated with arresting someone, processing them, taking them to jail, booking them, etc. So we try to make the process as simple as possible so that officers can bring people in. They answer a few questions, then they leave the person there, and then off they go to focus on maybe the safety of the rest of the community. Because this might be an illegal activity that the person's engaged in, but it's not a serious crime. So, you know, officers can tend to those, and they have more time available for that. Like I mentioned, this resource helps all of us stay safer, so that our officers can be out there taking care of us, and it also increases safety for the people that are brought into the recovery station, because being out in public while under the influence or intoxicated makes it dangerous. They could walk into traffic, or they could disturb the peace or cause property damage, and it's just not not a good thing to have the risk of increasing that contact with law enforcement that could turn out not very well. And this is one of the things that is most important for us, is that it really provides an opportunity for people to connect to treatment services and other resources. I know from my work that addiction is something that really takes a hold of the person's lives, and it takes multiple attempts at recovery in order to get that started. This provides a different avenue for that journey to begin. Next slide, please. Okay, so I talked a little bit about how this helps us with our AB-109 or potentially AB-109 population that from growing. And here, I categorized our referral sources a bit differently. So for law enforcement, I included all those agencies that were represented earlier. BPD, sheriff, probation, parole, CHP. Then we have homeless agencies that have provided those referrals. So you see how in last fiscal year, that really increased. That's our work with flood ministries, with the navigation centers, and the homeless shelters. And so what we see that's really helpful there. We also have our sober living environment. So some of the contracted providers for our service programs are aware of this resource, and they have been able to bring us clients that are already engaged in service who may have a slip here and there. So, you know, if somebody uses drugs or alcohol and they're staying in a sober living, there's rules against that, right? And that's something that can potentially detract all their progress if they lose their housing placement. So the recovery station serves to our partners to be able to bring the person there. They let the intoxication pass, and they return to their assigned bed. Obviously, this is in coordination with their probation officer, who may agree to this as something that's helpful, not just for the individual, but also for the rest of the SLE, because they have, you know, they want to keep the environment safe for everybody. So we've definitely seen a benefit to our CBO partners through this program.
Okay, that's all I'll talk about here.
Next slide, please. Okay, so one of the ways that we measure success for this program is by seeing how many people that cross through our doors actually engage in treatment, because we offer it, we talk to people about it, we can't make them, but we think that because of our peer staff that is there who understand, maybe some situations have been there themselves, that's the magic element that can help in treatment engagement. So over the course of the 2 years, over 2 years that the program has been in operation, the columns you see here are the folks that have accepted a referral both to substance use disorder treatment and mental health treatment. And for substance use treatment, you see that about 66% actually follow through the next step of treatment. I wish all of my numbers looked like this. Obviously they don't. For folks that just call for service to my staff, we get about 1,200 calls a month requesting services. On my end, only about 30 to 35% of those folks actually make it to the next step. So you can see that here, even though not everybody accepts a referral to treatment, because people come by several times, the recovery station does have an impact on whether they follow through, which is what we're looking for. And in terms of mental health services, 75% follow through into treatment, which is great. Okay, next slide, please. All right, so here, if you're not familiar with sobering centers, I've just provided some examples and highlighting how all of these have some level of funding that is supported by law enforcement. Again, because law enforcement agencies in various places see the benefit and savings to their systems. Okay, next slide, please. Now, as I mentioned earlier, this project is currently supported by Mental Health Services Act, or MHSA Innovation Funding. This is time-limited funding that will carry us through June of 2024. So part of our task is really looking at how we're going to be able to maintain this project after this. And what I'm currently tasked with is really looking for ways that we'll be able to continue to fund it so that we can continue to provide this service, not just to your agencies, but the rest of the community. We really see the benefit of having this available. And we couldn't have done that without everybody's help here. We worked really hard at making the service known, but some of your staff are the ones that actually bring folks in, which is how we were able to show that the program is successful. So the types of funding that we've been looking at, they're pretty recent. The first bullet you see there is CalAIM. This is the change in Medi-Cal that the state is currently engaged in. They're trying to integrate physical health care, mental health care, and substance abuse care, dental care, all into one health plan, because we know that people are whole. They don't just have pieces that they need to address, they need to treat all the whole person. So with this new funding, we have a different category that wasn't available previously, specific for sobering centers. So we've been working with one of the local health plans, Kern Health Systems. It's the largest one, serves most Medi-Cal beneficiaries to do that. So they will, that's a piece that will help us bill them for these services at some degree. Now I'll say that this is, since it's new funding, we don't really know what the fiscal impact will be to the totality of the program, because the way that we have our program designed, you heard all the great things like having folks that have lived experience, and there's some costs associated with that. So our model really is trying to engage people into care, which might be different from other sobering centers. So all that to say that the rate that we have with the managed care plan is in and of itself not, it doesn't cover all the costs. So we're gonna monitor that to see how well we do with this new type of funding. Another way that we are hoping to continue to fund this program is with AB 109 funding. And also looking at local funding that's available, maybe to your agencies if you're interested in seeing whether this fits for you or not. Grants that might be able to cover our services, bless you. And other types of funding that may become available in the future. There is, we're also looking at the possibility of the opioid settlement, helping us to cover some of this work, because people who are using opioids might fit into this program. So just to conclude, Kern BHRS will be requesting growth funds this year and in the future to hope to continue this valuable resource in the community. Next slide. All right, so that is all I have for you today. I wanted to spend some time covering the details of the program to give the committee an opportunity to ask questions that I can clarify. So I'll conclude that.
Thank you very much for that presentation. Appreciate it. Any questions from the committee or comments?
And you said that there are currently 6 beds at the Sobering Center in its temporary location. When it moves back to its original location in January, how many beds will it have with the new conditional use permit that we petitioned for this approval?
Great question. So I stated at first that the planned capacity was 10 beds. The facility allows us to grow because we knew this was going to be successful. So we reapplied last year for another conditional use permit that gives us the opportunity to expand those beds up to 25. The facility is large enough to hold that, so we expect a lot of growth. So as we move forward, this is one of the things we'll have to consider to see whether the funding will be able to extend supports that kind of growth as well.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Ms. Bennett.
With the funding that you're talking about right now, I know you said that you don't know specifically maybe how much this is going to cover. Will it cover for the 6 beds that you have now? Do you know?
Not at this time. Okay. So the rate that we calculated based on our cost, the rate that the managed care plans are proposing is about a tenth of the actual cost of those beds.
Mr. Corson.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a service I know Dream Center staff have utilized, and it's on the menus for some of our folks who are coming in struggling a little bit quickly and stuff, and so it's a very valuable service. But I constantly hear staff out there saying, well, have you thought about the recovery center? I mean, so it is utilized, and we do appreciate it.
Thank you, and we appreciate those referrals.
Any other comments, questions?
What is the cost?
That is a great question. So overall budget for the contract for the service provider, the facility and administrative cost for next fiscal year, 22-23, is about $2.2 million.
Any other questions or comments? And then if you're going to present on the next one, you might just want to stay up there.
Yeah?
Yeah. So I'll just go to you next. There's no action needed on this one, so we're going to go to item number 7. And that's funding proposals for growth funds, and we'll go straight to B, which has been, since we just heard this presentation, we'll just turn it back over to you for your growth fund request, if that's what you want to do.
Thank you very much. So as you just heard me talk about the recovery station, Kern BHRS is requesting, the recovery station provides services to AB 109 eligible individuals, serving as a preventative measure for those who are under supervision of the Kern County Sheriff's Office or the Kern County Probation Department. Recovery station will act as an intercept for those at risk of reoffending and returning to incarceration. To maintain this essential service, Kern BHRS is requesting $1.5 million to sustain program operations beyond June of 2024, when current funding will no longer be available. Our growth fund request also includes $150,000 for funding for housing support for post-incarceration. This funding will provide sober living environment beds to support emergency and temporary housing for individuals served through Kern BHRS upon release from custody. That's for a total growth fund request of $1,650,000. And I'll answer any questions that anybody may have.
Any questions regarding that request? Okay, thank you very much. We're just going to hear the other items, and then we'll go to public comment when all the items have been heard under this. So next we'll go back up to A, which is probation. Probation is asking for approximately $1.1 million in the growth funds. The vast majority of this dollars will be going to mobile data computers for our patrol vehicles. Traditional law enforcement already has these devices. Probation typically has not. And probation has utilized on the Kern County Sheriff's dispatch to receive services, maybe one for warrants or stolen property or guns or, you know, just information on records. That's put a lot of stress on the sheriff dispatch, and in communications with the sheriff, this seemed to be a good solution for both of us to have probation be able to have that access to that information right there, right when they're out in the field, and also relieve some pressure from the sheriff, which probation greatly appreciates the services that are provided to us. So we've already budgeted some in our 22-23 fiscal year for some of these, but this money will allow us to complete and outfit our entire patrol fleet. So, and we're also asking for 4 additional vehicles, some security measures, and some training room renovations. I'd be happy to answer any questions regarding probation's request. Okay,
Chief.
Yes.
Would you mind my asking? Can you help me out with growth funds and how much is there? And
sure.
How do
you
go about allocating that?
Yeah, that growth funds happen every year. It's different every year depending on the state coffers, basically. And so this year there's available total $3,733,501. And so we do this every year as part of it at this meeting, where members of the CCP are able to request funds, and then we obviously discuss and make a decision.
Thank you.
Sure.
Chair, may I add something?
Yes.
Thank you. there's something unique about this growth funds as well. 10% comes off the top, actually, and is put in a what they call a local innovation fund, and that is a state requirement. It is an agreement that we have initiated. So that's why the amount, the total amount is actually $4.1 million. The amount available to the CCP is the $3.3 million. So the 10% goes into a fund that is under the jurisdiction of the CAO and the Board of Supervisors. Just one.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments on that item? The last item is our CBO program request. And we typically have this put in here for any money that is not requested go into the account for our next CBO contract. As you know, we just completed that process right now, and we had the most we had, almost $8 million and for a three-year contract period. But if we don't set aside some money every year, we'll have a big drop-off in services, which is what we don't want. So if my math is correct, if both these requests were approved, that would leave $942,401 to go into the CBO account for a future RFP. Any questions on the CBO program request? Yes?
How much have we historically allocated to the CBO request from previous growth funds amount? And I guess because what I'm getting at is if we were to allocate the full request from probation and behavior health, are we contributing significantly less into that account than we have in
previous? It has varied because the amount itself has varied every year. So there's been years where we haven't done any, and there's been years where we've done, I would say this is a pretty healthy, normal amount, percentage-wise, of what is typically given. But again, it's up to the discretion of the committee. And just to add on to that, the CBO program is on our base funds, gets, I forget what the percentage is offhand, but around $1 million, maybe a little bit more every year as well. So that goes into that same account too, and then we usually supplement it with growth funds.
How reliable are the growth fund contributions? Because if we're talking about, the probation request is for items that are bought and essentially paid for, but the behavioral health program sounds like a continuing cost or potential for a continuing cost. How realistic is it to continue funding it through growth funds?
It's hard to say with certainty because it does fluctuate. You know, we've had, I think one year we had almost $7 million and
this.
$9 million, and then that first year, I think right after COVID, I don't think there was any that year. So it does fluctuate, but in general, I would say around this amount, probably on average, is typically what we've gotten. But it, like I said, it does fluctuate.
Thank you.
Yep. Any other questions or comments from the committee? We'll just open it up to public comments. You make it come up.
I don't want to take up much of your time, but I am a novice in this area. This is new to us. This is a first invite. So can you just educate me just a little bit more? Maybe there's others too who need to know a little bit more about beginning steps for the CBO.
Sure. Okay. I'll just do it real quick, and then what I'll probably do is refer you to some staff after the meeting and we can talk. Okay. But we've done this. The CCP has funded CBO RFPs for almost since the beginning. And we usually do a three-year cycle when we go out to RFP. That just got completed this time, so we probably won't go out to an RFP for another 3 years. But I'll have you get with some staff afterwards, and we can answer any specific questions for you, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comments? Okay, so unless there's any other discussion from the committee, I would be asking for a motion to make a recommendation to the executive committee to approve the proposals as requested.
Motion, Kinzel, presumably.
Second.
I think I'll give it to Mr. Murillo for the second, and we'll take a roll call vote.
May I actually ask a question about the motion?
Of course.
Do we need to recuse ourselves from the vote for our departments, or can we vote on those?
Are you taking these separately, Chief, or are you taking them all as an aggregate?
Well, if we take it as an aggregate, you can say, okay. I kind of like the Board of Supervisors does, and recuse yourself from that particular subset, or would you think it would be better to do three roll call votes?
I think for clarity purposes, three roll call
votes. Okay, we'll do three roll call votes, and we'll start with probation's request, which is A, which is the $1,141,100.
Chief Maripol.
Abstain.
Board Executive Officer Harbor Pickens. District Attorney Zimmer.
Kinsel for Zimmer, yes.
Public Defender King.
Yes.
Sheriff Youngblood.
Doug Yock for Sheriff Youngblood, yes.
Director Kuwahara.
Yes.
Chief Terry.
Brian Croker for Chief Terry, yes.
Administrator Olvera.
Yes.
Director Maria.
Yes.
Executive Director Corson.
Yes.
Supervisor Perez. Assistant CEO Hitchcock.
Aaron Ellis for Assistant CEO Hitchcock, yes.
Superintendent Barlow.
Deborah Blank for Mary Barlow, yes.
And Victim Services Coordinator Henry.
Yes.
Thank you. Motion carries. We will go to now to 7B, which is Behavioral Health and Recovery Services request for $1,650,000, and that's to make a recommendation to the Executive Committee. Actually, I need a new motion for that, I guess. I would need a motion for that.
So moved.
Mr. Corson?
I'll second.
Second, Mr. Ellis. We will take a roll call vote.
Chief Maripol.
Yes.
Board Executive Officer Harbor Pickens. District Attorney Zimmer.
Kinsel for Zimmer, yes.
Public Defender King.
Yes.
Sheriff Youngblood.
Doug Yock for Sheriff Youngblood, yes.
Director Kuwahara.
Abstain.
Chief Terry.
Brian Croker for Chief Terry, yes.
Administrator Olvera.
Abstain.
Director Marie.
Yes.
Executive Director Corson.
Yes.
Supervisor Perez. Assistant CEO Hitchcock.
Aaron Ellis for Assistant CEO Hitchcock, yes.
Superintendent Barlow.
Deborah Plank for Mary Barlow, yes.
Victim Services Coordinator Henry.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Then last, I would need a motion to make a referral to the Executive Committee to put $942,401 of the growth funds into the CBO fund. Do I have such a motion?
I'll motion.
Motion, Ms. Kuwahara.
Second,
Ms. Finnerty. And we'll take a roll call vote.
Chief Mayor.
Yes.
Board Executive Officer Harbor Pickens. District Attorney Zimmer.
Kinsel for Zimmer, yes.
Public Defender King.
Yes.
Sheriff Hill.
Doug Yock for Sheriff Youngblood, yes.
Director Kuwahara.
Yes.
Chief Terry.
Brian Croker for Chief Terry, yes.
Administrator O'Dell.
Yes.
Director Marino.
Yes.
Executive Director Forsyth.
Yes.
Supervisor Perez. Assistant CEO Hitchcock.
Aaron Ellis for Assistant CEO Hitchcock, yes.
Superintendent Barlow.
Deborah Plank for Mary Barlow, yes.
Victim Services Coordinator Finn.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Motion carries. We will go to our next item, which is item number 8, which is ETR carry forward proposal from fiscal year 21-22 AB 109 funds.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jeremy Shoemaker, CEO manager of ETR. Back with a bit of background and addition of request, revised request. We are revising a request for fiscal year 2021. Who have an unexpended A-109 growth funds, a balance of $695,226. We've withdrawn the request in favor of a new plan that increases ETR referrals and strengthen collaborative efforts across multiple partners. Historically, ETR is relied most heavily on referrals from EMP, with additional referrals from probation and a small number of reverse referrals outside of sober living environments. The impact of COVID-19 on population at Laredo has resulted in a significant decrease in referrals from EMP to ETR. Our new plan focuses on the following strategies. Establishing a designated liaison with probation to handle referrals. Have probation give all the most AB-109 eligible clients a referral to ETR, with ETR assuming responsibility for screening, helping clients complete their 5-page questionnaire, and obtaining their missing right to work documents. We will provide basic information about ETR services to probation to give clients focusing on the most relevant services. We'll establish an outreach schedule for ETR at the Adult Probation Center and Day Reporting Center in coordination with GEO Group. We'll conduct outreach and enrollment activities with potential A-109 clients at both the M Street and Bunge Lane Navigation Centers in coordination with CAPK, the City of Bakersfield, and community-based providers overseeing workforce services at the locations. We'll also conduct standalone outreach efforts at Laredo in addition to current ETR workshops to the degree possible given staffing and pandemic conditions. Finally, we will allocate over $500,000 in A19 growth funds to place A19 participants in our transitional job short-term paid training, traditional training programs, career apprenticeships, paid work experience, and provide supportive services, and increase and formalize our work with SOEs to provide outreach and assistance on a regular schedule, obtaining reverse referrals from EMP, and probation for those who are A19 eligible. This request includes $134,478 in staff costs and overhead, an additional program specialist case manager to conduct outreach and enrollment activities at various sites, as well as an extra help program technician to assist team members with outreach. Of course, $558,000 in additional funds dedicated to participant training, traditional jobs, on-the-job training, classroom training, and a paid work experience and associated supportive services. $1,000 in costs associated with additional off-site efforts, and $1,000 in additional outreach materials, such as flyers and informational videos. Under this plan, 80% of the carry-forward balance is earmarked for participant training, wages, and supportive services, 19% for staff costs, including extra outreach and staff assistance services, and only 1% to cover travel and marketing costs. Therefore, we recommend and ask humbly that you approve this request. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that presentation. Are there any questions from the committee? Is there any public comment on this item? Okay, not seeing any. I would therefore request that have a motion to make a recommendation to the executive committee to approve the carry forward AB109 funds as requested. Do I have such a motion?
I'll make a motion.
And I'll second. I also appreciate ETR coming back after feedback from the one meeting where there were concerns and coming back with a revised plan. So.
I appreciate their staff meeting with our staff and other stakeholders very much. So we have a motion and a second. We will take a roll call vote.
Chief Miracle.
Yes.
Court Executive Officer Harper Pickens. District Attorney Zimmer.
Kinzel for Zimmer, yes.
Public Defender King.
Yes.
Sheriff Youngblood.
Sheriff Youngblood, yes.
Director Kuhar.
Yes.
Chief Terry.
Ryan Croker for Chief Terry, yes.
Administrator Olvera.
Yes.
Director Murillo.
Yes.
Executive Director Corson.
Yes.
Supervisor Perez. Assistant CEO Hitchcock.
Aaron Ellis for Assistant CEO Hitchcock, abstain.
Superintendent Barla.
Deborah Point for Mary Barla, yes.
And Victim Services Coordinator.
Yes.
All right, motion carries. Thank you very much. Next item is the BSCC Fiscal Year 22-23 CCP Survey for receipt of $200,000 in AB109 funding. And we have Vaughn Griffith, who's going to take this over. So please present.
Good morning, everyone. The BSCC survey is completed every year through our collaboration with Behavioral Health Sheriff Information. And the completion and submission of this survey provides the CCP with $200,000 in funding on an annual basis. I would also like to thank our partners from the KCSO and BHRS for their help in completing this survey. And I would just like to take a brief moment to review the goals that we've included in Part A of the survey, as these are goals that we continue to make progress on every year that we complete and submit it. Our first goal is that of increasing substance use disorder treatment for offenders in Kern County. In prior years, due to the COVID-19 pandemic, substance use disorder in custody services have declined. Currently, there has been a slow increase in class participants as COVID-positive cases have substantially decreased. Our next goal within the survey has been to continue to provide funding opportunities for community-based organizations for reentry services to the criminal justice population in Kern County. Earlier this year, on March 2nd, the CCP authorized staff to develop and implement the new CBO RFP process, with just under $8 million allocated for the CBO program, and we contracted with 10 providers for that RFP cycle. Last year, Kern County Probation created a goal involving the creation of a pretrial unit to comply with the California Supreme Court's decision in the Henry Humphrey case. In compliance with that decision, the Kern County Probation Department created the Adult Courts Services Division, and since then expanded the pretrial unit to include pretrial A and B. The staffing levels of these units have been increased as well to improve the caseload to staff ratio. The survey also highlights how in-custody programs provided by KCSO, such as GED preparation, life skills, parenting, anger management, domestic violence, substance abuse, and food services have been demonstrated to have a positive impact on recidivism, and how KCSO also provides evidence-based programs and validated assessment tools that were used to place 30 inmates to fiscal year 21-22 into programs that directly address the criminogenic needs. During fiscal year 21-22, BHRS, in partnership with the KCSO Programs Unit, screened and admitted 32 participants into the in-custody matrix and residential substance abuse treatment programs at the Laredo Detention Facilities. Of these, 15 successfully completed the in-custody program. Additionally, the survey describes how the adult transition team within BHRS serves individuals with serious and persistent mental illnesses with a lengthy legal history. ATT served 92 unduplicated individuals with severe mental illness from July 1st to June 30th of this year. The mental health system's current action is also contracted with BHRS to provide intensive outpatient treatment to AB-109 individuals who do not respond to traditional outpatient treatment. The goal of these programs is to reduce frequent psychiatric hospitalizations, homelessness, and reoccurring incarceration. From July 1st to June 30th, 2022, 60 individuals were served in these programs. Part B of the survey lists how the budgets have been distributed within the CCP organizations and how they were dispersed for services. And in conclusion, the remainder of the survey highlights some success stories within our programs. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Griffith. Are there any questions from the committee?
I don't have a question, but I just wanted to tell you how much it appreciated the amount of work that probably goes into this. And having done reports, it's a lot. So thank you very much for all the work that went into it.
As I said, I appreciate the help from KCSO and insurance as well in that.
Thank you for that. Any other comments or questions? Okay, thank you. Are there any public comments on this item? Not seeing any, therefore I request a motion to make a recommendation to the Executive Committee to approve the submission of the survey and authorize staff to make non-substantive changes prior to submission. Do I have such a motion?
So moved.
Mr. Corson? Do I have a second?
Second.
Ms. Kuwahara? I think we can just take a roll or a oral vote on this one, or should we? Okay. All right. Small victory. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, so our next CCP meeting is going to be March 15th, 2023 at 8:30 at this location. And so we're going to adjourn as a CCP. We're then going to reconvene as the Executive Committee, so members of the public are welcome to stay if they want, but if you're not interested, we kind of just repeat what we just said. Just please go ahead and keep it quiet and exit. And then if someone with staff can just make sure that we have contact information with the new program and set something up. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
Enjoy.
Honored to serve.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for everything. Good luck.
See you next time.
We kind of just repeat. Just kind of approved the motion. It's kind of awesome. You can just give it to, you have, want to give a card?
No, I have something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. This is the job. I have something. Thank you so much for everything you've done, for inviting
me. Come on up. Come on.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to say, I knew none of you because of this man. I don't want to get emotional, but because of this man, he made a difference. He has made a difference, and I'm so sad to see you go. But I'm so thankful that you have been a part of our life so far. Okay,
thank,
and I just have a little something just a thank you. Okay? May I just sit and observe? I
of
promise
course.
I won't talk.
Nope,
I promise
nope,
I won't
no,
talk.
You can't. You can talk if you want.
All right.
Okay. We'll go ahead and convene as the Executive Committee of the CCP and at our December 14th, 2022 meeting, and we'll start with roll call, Ms. Vaughn.
Chief Mayor.
Here.
Fourth Executive Officer Harbor Pickens. District Attorney Zimmer.
Kendall for Zimmer.
Public Defender King.
Here.
Sheriff Youngblood.
Doug Yacker, Sheriff Youngblood.
Director Kuwahara.
Here.
And Chief Terry.
Ryan Crowford for Chief Terry.
Okay.
Okay, our first item is to approve our minutes from our executive committee's special meeting of October 5th, 2022. Those minutes were sent out to everybody. So unless there's any comments or requested changes, I would just need a motion and a second to approve those minutes.
Motion, Tinsel.
I'll second.
And a second, Ms. Kuwahara. Are there any public comments on that item? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Next is public presentations. Are there any public presentations?
Can I make a presentation?
Oh. What's that?
Real quick, can I make a presentation just about presentation? We have two of our analysts will be leaving us as of Friday, and I just wanted to publicly acknowledge their help to the over the couple of years, and a lot they've done a tremendous amount of work in that short period of time, and that's Alvaro Ramhill Villasenor and Kevin Holland. So I just wanted to.
I appreciate you doing that, and
acknowledge that.
I know how much work it is behind the scenes, so I do appreciate it. So thank you for that recognition. Any other public presentations? Yes.
I'd just like to acknowledge that this is Under Sheriff Knox last meeting, and I really do appreciate his participation globally in the community.
For sure. I thought he was trying to keep it quiet, so I didn't say anything. but I appreciate you because that's. He deserves a recognition and a thanks. Thank you. Okay, any other? Okay, next is executive member committee announcements or reports. Okay, hearing none, we'll go to item number four. And we have, under this, we have three different recommendations from the full CCP. We'll take A first. We have a recommendation to approve the growth request from probation. And so I would need a motion and a second to approve that recommendation. Yeah.
Motion, Kinzel.
Motion?
Second.
Second, Ms. Kuwahara. Is there any public comment on this item? And we'll take a roll call vote.
Chief Miracle.
Stain.
Court Executive Officer Harvard Pickens. District Attorney Zimmer.
Kinzel for Zimmer, yes.
Public Defender King.
Yes.
Sheriff Youngblood.
Yeah, yeah, Sheriff Youngblood, yes.
And Director Kuwahara, yes.
Brian Croker for Chief Terry, yes.
Thank you. And we, on B, we have a motion, a recommendation from the full CCP to approve Behavioral Health and Recovery Services request for growth fund allocations. Do I have a motion to approve that recommendation?
Motion, Kinzel.
We have a motion and a second?
Second.
So we have a second. And is there any public comment on this item? Seeing none, we'll take a roll call vote.
Chief Miracle.
Yes.
Court Executive Officer Harvard Pickens. District Attorney Zimmer.
Kinzel for Zimmer, yes.
Public Defender King.
Yes.
Sheriff Youngblood.
Derek Yarker for Sheriff Youngblood, yes.
Director Kuwahara.
Epstein.
And Chief Terry.
Ryan Croker for Chief Terry, yes.
Okay, thank you. Motion carries. Lastly, we had a recommendation from the full CCP to approve growth fund allocation to the CBO fund in the amount of $942,401. Do I have a motion to approve that recommendation?
Motion to approve.
Motion, Ms. Kuwahara?
Do I have a second? I'll second it.
We have a second. And is there any public comment on this item? Seeing none, we'll take a roll call vote.
Chief Miracle.
Yes.
Court Executive Officer Harvard Pickens. District Attorney Zimmer.
Kinzel for Zimmer, yes.
Public Defender King.
Yes.
Sheriff Youngblood.
Sheriff Youngblood, yes.
Director Kuwahara.
Yes.
And Chief Terry.
Ryan Croker for Chief Terry, yes.
Okay, thank you. Item number five, we have a recommendation from the full CCP to approve ETR's new carry forward proposal carry forward from fiscal year 21-22. Do I have a motion to approve that recommendation?
Motion,
Ms. Kuwahara?
Second, Kinzel.
Second. Is there any public comment on this item? Seeing none, we will take a roll call vote.
Chief Miracle.
Yes.
Court Executive Officer Harvard Pickens. District Attorney Zimmer.
Kinzel for Zimmer, yes.
Public Defender King.
Yes.
Sheriff Youngblood.
Sheriff Youngblood, yes.
Director Kuwahara.
Yes.
And Chief Terry.
Ryan Croker for Chief Terry, yes.
Okay, thank you. Next item is we have a recommendation from the full CCP to approve the BSCC CCP survey and submit that to the BSCC. Do I have a motion to accept that recommendation?
Motion.
Motion, Ms. Kuwahara?
Second, Kinzel.
We have a second. Is there any public comment on this item? Seeing none, we'll take an oral vote. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? And we will, our next meeting will follow the full CCP meeting on March 15th, 2023. And we will adjourn as the executive committee. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, definitely.
Now everyone's going to be
I know.
Knocking on the door.
I'm here.